Nearly a dead heat. I mean, maybe you give a slight advantage to Secretary Clinton going into the debate. She's up, you know, right around a point nationally. But in the Electoral College, they are near, both of them, real close to 270. So it couldn't have been closer going into the debate.
What do some of the swing states look like right now?
They're getting really tight. Last week we talked about Pennsylvania. It had been a 10-point race there with Secretary Clinton ahead. Then last week Trump had trimmed it to about, you know, 4. Now in the RCP average, it's at 2 points. It's just under 2 points. Recent polling has showed it, you know, just about tied. So that's gotten really close here in Pennsylvania. In Colorado, same situation, same kind of trend line. Secretary Clinton had been up a decent amount. Now Trump has actually taken a slight lead. They're basically tied. Same in Florida, they're basically tied. Maine has come in a state that a lot of people thought would be solidly for Secretary Clinton is now, you know, within 4 points, 3.8 points. So the swing states are getting really close. There are some ones we didn't expect that might be in play now. And it's really tight. You give us still a slight advantage to the secretary because she's, you know, she has, Democrats generally have an advantage with the Electoral College and solid states that they have give them a higher baseline. But it's real close.
How do you expect the debate to affect polls coming out next week?
You know, historically, the debate, they shift a little bit. You know, the first debate in 2012 between Romney and the president, people thought Romney did a good job. He went up in the polls a few points. But, you know, a couple weeks after, at the second and third debate, it kind of settled down. And ultimately, the debates didn't really change the trajectory of the race. Before the debates, the president was up a few points. He ended up winning by a few points. And that's been historically the trend. Is debates, you know, they have a sudden impact, a few points sometimes, and in a race as close as this one, that could have an impact. But generally, the pre-debate trajectory of the race and the post-debate trajectory aren't all that different. I think ultimately people give a slight win to the secretary during the debate, so she might go up a couple points here, but how much it changes the ultimate outcome of the race shouldn't be that much.
Looking at the next debate being a town hall style debate, how do you think that will affect the exchanges between the secretary and Mr. Trump?
I think they're really going to have to think on their feet. I mean, they still had to here in the last debate, but I think in this town hall, they're going to be walking around. They're going to be interacting with an audience more. They're going to be taking audience questions. I think it causes you to think on your feet more. I think they're going to have to be more relatable because they're going to be interacting with the person asking the question rather than, you know, going back and forth with each other. They still will do that, but I think they're going to have to think on their feet more and be more relatable to the person asking the question.
And then also, does a moderator's job in a town hall debate change than, for example, Lester Holt's job in the debate last night?
I don't think it changes it that much. I still think, you know, mostly it's going to be the candidate's job. They're still going to be able to fact check each other. They're still going to be able to rebut each other. They're still going to have the facts about them, and if they have that and they have the points they want to make, they'll be able to do a good job of contrasting with each other. I think that's more going to be their job than the moderators.
So switching to the congressional races, are there any key congressional races that have tightened up over the last week?
Well, in the House, we're still waiting for a lot of polling. Those races are going to start heating up really in October. They're starting now, but there's not a lot of polling out. So, you know, we go on the forecasts, which still show Democrats picking up seats, but not enough not the 30 they would need to flip the House to their control. So probably still looking at a reduced Republican majority there, but we'll have a better idea in the coming weeks with the House. And then the Senate, we can take a look at Pennsylvania. That's been a real tight race the whole way. Back in, you know, the middle of the summer, Pat Toomey, the incumbent Republican, was up a decent margin, 10 points over Katie McGinty. But since then, it's really narrowed. Since she's become the nominee for the Democrats, it's really narrowed. It's been around a single-point race for over a month now, and it's still, you know, in the latest average, she's up by 1 point. That's going to be a key race. That could very well decide who takes the majority in the Senate. So we'll have to keep looking at that one real closely.
Okay, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you again for being with us, Ben. We really appreciate your analysis every week. So now we're going to go right to our analysis of yesterday's debate. Again, with us today are Nick and Andrew. Nick is the president of the Lafayette College Democrats Club, and Andrew is the co-president of the Lafayette College Republican Club. Thank you very much for being with us, guys.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here representing the Lafayette College Republicans.
And thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that you guys took the opportunity to do this, and I think we can talk about some important things.
Awesome. So if you guys want to just kind of go back and forth and talk about your overall impressions of the debate, don't need to get into crazy specifics right away, but just kind of like what your initial reactions are and what you thought while you were watching it yesterday.
Yeah, so certainly it was an extremely highly anticipated debate. There were between 80 and 90 million viewers to this debate, which is the most for any presidential debate since the 1980 debate between President Carter and Ronald Reagan. I think really we didn't really learn too much new from this debate. Hillary definitely seemed very scripted, very robotic. Her answers were very well practiced, and I think she definitely delivered with her execution. And at the same time, Trump appeared a little angsty, a bit more hostile than Hillary. He was continually on the defensive. Another takeaway that I had from the debate was just really lackluster moderation by Lester Holt. I think he was just kind of lost his poise, didn't really position himself well in the debate. I think he allowed both candidates to kind of ramble, go over their time limits, and just kind of make a lot of personal attacks. And really, he allowed them to not talk about policy and just really attack one another on a personal level. So I think the debate, I would argue that Hillary Clinton did win. Even as a Republican, I would say that she definitely came out slightly on top. But unlike the 2012 first debate between Mitt Romney and President Obama, where Romney really trounced Obama and it had a significant effect in the polls, I don't really see much changing in the polls based off this first debate.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Andrew. And Nick, do you feel free to respond to that?
Yeah, of course. I think it's really important when considering the question, what's your takeaway, really what type of what the audience we're talking about, because each type of audience that we have to these debates, be them, you know, Democrats or Republicans, Trump supporters or Hillary supporters or independents, all have different takeaways to this. I think if you're a Trump supporter, your takeaway is Trump's doing what he does best. He goes up there, he yells at Hillary, you know, does those power type of stances and points that seem to do well with his supporters. You have Hillary, to liberals, she's doing what she does. She goes up there, she answers the questions, she talks about policies and facts, number of other things that all liberals enjoy. Now, what's important, I think, is the takeaway for the independents. I can't really speak to what exactly independents are looking for, but for the most part, it seems to be things about the economy and things about policy and things that are substantial, things that can actually affect them, and who ultimately is a presidential candidate. And when you look at yesterday's debate, and I think this is why I'd also give the edge to Hillary, probably by a larger margin than my Republican compatriot, I think Hillary did a very successful job in establishing herself as a serious presidential candidate. Not that there's any been doubt about that, but I think what she did well was responding to these questions and also, you know, pushing back at Trump a little on a few points, asking some questions about some of the racist remarks Trump's made, pushing back on the emails thing, and I think she did a very successful job in holding her own and showing that she has what it takes to be president of the United States.
So, Andrew, Mr. Trump and Secretary Clinton clearly set up different ways that they were going to bring jobs to America. Which one of those ways do you think really hits home with the average American citizen?
Yeah, so the first section of the debate focused on the economic vision for America, and I think that is really where Trump, who is a career businessman, really excelled in the debate. I think he got off to a great start discussing his economic policy. I think the cornerstone of his campaign, the message that's really resonated most with voters throughout the past 14, 15, 16 months of the campaign, is the fact that he identifies so greatly with middle-class, blue-collar American workers who really feel that they've been let down by career politicians, not just President Obama and Hillary Clinton, but even members of Trump's so-called Republican establishment. So I think Trump's idea of just really needing to renegotiate trade deals, such as the TPP, which he attacked Hillary Clinton last night for as referring to as the gold standard of trade deals, is really something that resonated with Americans. And I just think that his ideas of needing to bring jobs back to this country, bringing them back from China, from Mexico, and other countries, is really imperative to spurring economic growth in this country and cutting down bureaucratic red tape and spurring job growth amongst the middle class.
Nick?
I actually disagree that a lot of the points brought up by Trump actually substantiate into an actual platform. I think he actually made a big point of saying that he would bring these jobs back. And when more directly asked by the moderator how he would bring these jobs back, he said there would be an exit tax, which is a tariff. He avoided using the word tariff, but that's what it would be. I think essentially what he's trying to say is he would add tariffs to anyone who tried to leave the United States and do business elsewhere. I think for a number of reasons that's not a good idea and won't actually work. And Hillary Clinton's idea of focusing instead on different jobs and trying to go back to something that America isn't anymore. America isn't an industrial powerhouse to the extent that China and India and a number of other countries are right now. Those countries can do it way cheaper than us, and they will continue to do so because they don't have the type of regulations we have. And I don't think we're going to deregulate, or if Trump would like us to do that, but I think a lot of the consequences from that isn't something the American people are ready to accept. I think, if anything, the idea of moving forward with green energy, which has made many strides in recent history, is a positive way to bring jobs back to America in an entirely new industry, which will pay dividends in the future. So it's on to the new with Hillary, and I think that idea works. And to the idea of Trump being a businessman, he certainly mentioned this a lot, and I must agree that he does appeal to a very specific type of blue-collar worker in America who, when Trump says, oh, I'm a businessman, and he said it all throughout the debate, oh, I have a business in this city, or oh, I went to Charlotte and I've property there. You know, he name drops all the time that he's a business person and that he's successful and that he has money. And this appeals to a lot of people. But that in and of itself, it isn't a platform. I mean, I think in many ways, when asked more directly about what he's going to do, he didn't offer much substance.
So, Nick, do you believe that Hillary Clinton has given up on bringing back manufacturing jobs to the U.S.? Do you think that she's given up that Mexico, China will be keeping those jobs and they're no longer going to be possible in the U.S.?
Well, I think that's sort of maybe a hard question to answer, because whether or not she's given up on something like that, I don't know if she'd say it if she has. I don't think anyone would sit up here or any presidential candidate is going to say, by the way, people have lost your jobs, we're not going to get new ones. We're not going to get those jobs back, but we might get new ones. That might seem, you know, not the wisest thing to say to an electorate who, for the most part, is incredibly focused on the economy. If anything, I think it's likely that she may have given up on some of the old jobs that we had previously and is attempting to replace those jobs with these green energy jobs, and I think that's what her plan laid out. Whether or not she explicitly stated, let's give up on those jobs, she didn't, and I doubt she ever will. But I think the idea that she has expressed is that we should move forward with new types of jobs, different types of jobs that hopefully would be the same numerically, but are very different from what we've had before.
So, Andrew, should those jobs be given up on?
Well, yeah, I agree with Nick that I don't really think Hillary would ever explicitly say that she's going to give up on these jobs. I think what it comes down to is the idea of corporate aversion and outsourcing of jobs is just something that's far more crucial to Trump's message than Hillary's message. He really focuses on highlighting corporate aversion by companies such as Carrier, which is an air conditioning company that moved their corporate headquarters to Mexico to avoid America's really, really high corporate tax rate. So I think that it's just something that's much more central to Trump's campaign, something that's really resonating amongst his voters. And I just think that it's an issue also that Hillary has continually flip-flopped on. As I mentioned earlier, she in the past had praised the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, and as Trump throughout this campaign has really continued to shed a negative light on that agreement, Hillary has slowly peeled back her praise and come to say that she now believes it should be at least revised or completely taken out of place. So I just would say that it's far more crucial to Trump's campaign and not really something that Clinton is focusing on as much.
All right. So now just this is going to be for both of you. Andrew, you can go first. Whether Mr. Trump pays federal taxes or not, which is something that he heavily alluded to in the debate last night, is it appealing that he could have potentially gamed the system by avoiding paying federal taxes?
I do think it's appealing. I also, even as a Trump supporter, I think he should release his tax returns. Every other presidential candidate in our history has done so, so I don't exactly see too many reasons why he shouldn't. However, I do think it is very rich that he's not doing anything illegal by not releasing his tax returns. He is currently under audit, and many of his lawyers have advised him that it would not be in his best interest to release his tax returns while he is under audit. And he also mentioned a very pressing point in last night's debate, which I think deserves more attention. A lot of, he said, his rich friends, so a lot of very wealthy CEOs of major companies in America, they are not even being audited. So I think the fact that he is currently being audited by the IRS proves that he really doesn't have anything to hide and is not engaging in any substantial illegal activity.
I think in response to that. I think whether or not he has anything to hide, we don't know at this point. And I think there's really no need to speculate as to what he can or can't have. I think the only thing we have to deal with are the facts. And the fact is, he hasn't released his tax returns. Fact is, every other president in the last 40-some years has released their tax returns when they ran for president. And I think it's important to show the American people for that trust that, here are my tax returns, feel free to look at them. They're, certainly he's doing nothing illegal by not releasing it. It's not written anywhere that you have to. I just think it's important that he does, and I think the American people think it's important as well, especially when you consider the fact that if he certainly does have nothing to hide, then by all means, release it. There's nothing that says when you're under audit, you can't release your tax returns. I don't even understand why his lawyers would advise him not to unless he had something that shouldn't have been there, because otherwise there is no reason for him not to release his tax returns. And I think that's a pretty negative thing, especially if it does show that he was dodging taxes through loopholes, and part of his platform is he's going to remove the loopholes of other businesses when he's president. That looks sort of hypocritical, and I think that could be a negative point for him if it was shown to be the case.
So going off of that, comparing Mr. Trump's tax returns to Secretary Clinton's emails, he made a very strong point last night, repeatedly pointing out that he would release his tax returns when Secretary Clinton released her missing emails. Nick, you can start first. Do you believe that this is a fair trade-off? And then Andrew, you can respond.
I don't think it's a fair trade-off. As I said previously, every president has released their tax returns prior to running and then being elected for president. It's not a tit-for-tat thing. You can't say, oh, I'll give you this and you can give me that. If the fact of the matter is, he should have released his tax returns. In regards to the whole email controversy, it already went to trial and nothing has came of it. I think for the most part, it's an overblown thing that people keep referencing to sort of put Hillary down. She brought it up yesterday. She acknowledged that she made mistakes. I also acknowledge that Trump had a point that saying deleting, 13,000 emails is hardly much of a mistake. And, that's a fair point as well. But at the end of the day, there is no legal evidence of anything. She wasn't convicted. The most she was accused of was bad practices. And if we're working from what you can accuse someone of, there's nothing in fact that shows she really committed an awful wrongdoing here. And I don't think that's something that you can, trade off for tax returns. And even that being said, I doubt Trump would still release his tax returns if she kept her word.
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that in last night's debate, Trump did say that when his audit is complete, he will release. So I think this whole conversation will be a moot point within weeks. And so I think the main defense from the left for why Trump should release his tax returns is that every other presidential candidate has released his tax returns. So looking at this, whether or not this is a fair trade-off, tax returns for emails, there's really no precedent with whether or not a presidential candidate should have to release his or her emails per se, because Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, is the only presidential candidate to ever jeopardize our national security through her use of a private email server. This is something that we've never seen before, and that's why I don't think that it's as easy for the right to come up with just like a president argument. We can't really say, oh, every other candidate's released their emails, because this is such an extenuating circumstance. And as we saw with President Comey, Director Comey of the FBI testifying in front of Congress, the exchange Director Comey had with Congressman Trey Gowdy of Ohio was really telling, in which Gowdy just highlighted so many lies that Hillary Clinton has continually been telling the American people regarding her use of the private email server over the past year and a half. And so I just think that it's more than a fair trade-off for Trump. He will absolutely release his tax returns if Hillary Clinton agrees to release the over 30,000 emails that she is hiding from the American people.
Not much to respond to this in that extent. There's really nothing that's being hidden. The emails have been deleted. I don't think there's any way getting back to that. And I think that was solved ages ago in the congressional hearing. There's really nothing else to be discussed about that. Hillary was grilled on the stand for 8 hours, and nothing came of it. That's over, and I think any more references we can make to it at this point is moot. And I think we should look to the future, and hopefully in the future, as my Republican compatriot has stated, we can see Trump's tax returns. And if we do see those, I hope they don't end up looking bad for him, because that's not going to be helpful for their case. But at the end of the day, I think it's important he releases it. It's important that we follow the precedent of all the presidents who've ran for office previously and releases them, regardless of some trade-off and regardless of time.
So looking into the future, fighting ISIS is probably going to be one of the biggest issues for the next president. Mr. Trump has said that he will not be releasing a plan because he doesn't want to give the plan directly to the enemy, while Hillary Clinton has released a plan while slightly vague. So should a presidential candidate being forced to release their plan to the public so they can make a decision for themselves? Andrew?
Yeah, I certainly agree with Mr. Trump's stance on this issue. I think it's important for the knowledge of the voters. The candidates release general strategies of how they plan to deal with ISIS and other terrorist groups, how they plan to combat terrorism. But to me, it's common sense. If this debate is being broadcast to nearly 90 million Americans, obviously ISIS has every access to watch the debate, so it makes no sense to me why any candidate would stand on the national debate stage and give a line-by-line plan on how they plan to defeat ISIS, because if I were the enemy, I would watch that and come up with a subsequent line-by-line plan on how I would combat Hillary Clinton's strategy. So I think it's just really, for lack of a better term, stupid to stand on national television and say, hey, ISIS, we're coming for you. This is exactly what we're going to do, because that just opens the door for ISIS to combat our plans.
I'm in full agreement. I think it is unreasonable to say, your plan line by line. But that being said, I think what's being asked isn't for something like that. It's asking for a plan in general. Hillary Clinton didn't go up there and say, these are our specific information. This is where we know ISIS is hiding out. These are the cells we know. She listed a very general and, as we mentioned, vague plan to combat ISIS. And I think that's a very fair thing for a president to do. There are some matters of national security that don't need to be shared, that should be private, that should be confidential. And I think it's the president's jurisdiction to decide what those matters are. And I would say that the reason Trump hasn't released any plan is because he doesn't have a plan. You heard him himself yesterday on the debate stage. He hasn't thought much of NATO. That's pretty concerning for a president who's planning on tackling ISIS, especially because NATO is currently fighting ISIS. Us and our allies in NATO are working on it, and as Hillary acknowledged herself, when she was asked about NATO, she discussed their new anti-terrorism plan they had listed out there, and that's something that Trump hasn't even considered or probably hasn't even heard of prior to yesterday's debate. That's pretty concerning. You can't address ISIS if you don't even know who's along your side and who's the enemy. And if Trump's not examining NATO or the other important aspects of our national security, how can we trust that he has a plan?
All right, moving on to the next question. Do you believe that there was a... should the issue of Secretary Clinton's stamina be considered an issue in this election? Mr. Trump specifically stated that he believed that Secretary Clinton had a quote-unquote lack of stamina that would make her unfit to be president. Nick, you can start.
I think that's an unfair question for a lot of reasons. Trump's just as old. Sometimes it's hard to tell on the stage because both of those candidates wear makeup to disguise their age. I think in our era with modern medicine, especially with vice presidents and a number of other of separation of powers, that's not really primarily a concern. I know in the 2008 election, people grilled John McCain because he had Sarah Palin as vice president. People thought what would happen if he was incapacitated and we had her as our president. And I know that was a big matter of controversy, but he's still alive. Nothing's happened to him. You look at FDR, he was in a wheelchair because of polio and he hid that from the American public. There's a lot of reasons that, physical states might affect the president's ability, but I think in history, I think the president will normally put the country first. I think there's no indication that either of the candidates up on the stage currently have any sort of debilitating health disease. And as I mentioned earlier, if a president with polio can lead us through the Great Depression and World War II, I doubt something such as pneumonia, the pneumonia scare that Hillary Clinton had, is going to bite us in the back at some point in the future.
Andrew, your response?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I just like to point out, I thought one of the most entertaining moments of the debates, one of the best lines by either candidate, was after Lester Holt asked this question about stamina. I really did like Secretary Clinton's answer, when she said, Mr. Trump, don't talk to me about stamina. I sat in front of Congress for 11 hours in the Benghazi hearing. I thought that was definitely one of her most strong answers throughout the evening. However, I hate to buy into, you know, what Hillary would call a right-wing conspiracy, but we saw many videos at the 9/11 ceremonies of Hillary Clinton nearly fainting and being carried into her motorcade by some of her aides. So I'm certainly not going to sit here and argue that Hillary Clinton is physically unfit to be president. However, I do think that just as she pressed Bernie Sanders in the primary to release his medical documents, she questioned his age and questioned his mental well-being, physical well-being, excuse me. I think that both Donald Trump and Secretary Clinton should be examined by a third-party physician, and that third-party physician should then release their medical records and prove that they are both physically fit to be president, because right now we've only seen reports from the personal physicians of both Trump and Secretary Clinton that say that they are fit to be president. So I think that a third-party physician and just a outside voice without any partisan lines in there would be very helpful for the electorate.
So while the debate was definitely surrounded by a lot of personal attacks, in general, do you believe that there was a lack of substance throughout the debate that really that didn't allow citizens to get a fair read on the candidates and their positions? Andrew, you can start.
I do. I think the debate was very troublingly unsubstantive as it relates to policy. Again, I really attribute that to the poor moderation by Lester Holt. He easily let candidates run over their time limits and completely veer off course and not even mention the crux of the question in their answer. It was a lot of personal attacks. And as I said in the opening question, we really didn't learn anything new. Everyone expected Trump to kind of be a bit angsty, to attack Hillary on a personal note. And likewise, everyone kind of expected Secretary Clinton to be a bit robotic, if you will, and have very stage answers. I thought her trumped-up, trickle-down answer was unimaginably staged. I can't even imagine how many times she looked in the mirror and practiced that one. So I would say that we overall just didn't learn anything new, and quite troublingly for the American voters, there was far too many personal attacks and not enough talk about concrete policy issues that will determine the future of this country.
I would actually disagree with that. I thought I learned a lot through that debate, at least from my take on both candidates. And I also thought there was a fair degree of substance. And I also thought Lester Holt didn't actually do an awful job. I actually appreciated his hands-off moderating, because I think at the end of the day, what that resulted in is you saw the candidates being themselves. And I'm not going to deny that Hillary was robotic at times, that trumped up trickle down was incredibly staged, and there were a few times where she would like pause and like breathe in and then, you know, say some staged answer. But I think the opening up of the floor to this open dialogue was really positive, because we saw Trump and Hillary just be themselves, or at least as much as you can be yourselves in a presidential debate. I think Trump you know, did his old thing as he normally does, but I was most impressed by Hillary actually having some like proper response and gusto to a lot of the things he slugged at her. And I thought a few times she had some really great lines against him that like stemmed from the moment, that were clearly not rehearsed, that were her actually responding to him in turn. And that's the sort of thing that she needs to appeal to the American moderates, to show that she's not some stage robot as she likes to be characterized by the opposition, but is a person. And I think by opening up the stage to this free-form dialogue, we did see ideas, and we saw ideas from Hillary Clinton. We saw her policy, we saw the ideas she presented, her knowledge and experience with things such as NATO, foreign policy, and trade agreements. And what we saw Trump do a lot was simply say things like, oh, it's China's fault, or it's Russia's fault, or I have businesses here, this guy's really great, he has the absolute best words. Like these sort of lines and vague statements that don't mean much at the end of the day. There's no substance there. But I think one of the things he said is like Palm Beach is the best, you know, place in the world, the literal best or something like that. Just like it sort of blows my mind. He's like writing like a third grade essay where you use like every best or big or largest word that you can to describe something, and there's no substance there. And I think the lack of substance would stem as a result of Trump's failure rather than Hillary Clinton's failure.
Andrew, would you care to respond to that?
I would just say that I would just disagree. I think that there was a lack of substance on both sides. Again, we didn't really learn anything new. Just continued stage responses from Hillary that we've been hearing for the past year. Something came directly out of her acceptance speech at the convention. She repeated the line of, how could you trust a man with the nuclear codes if you can bait him with a tweet? I want to see something new out of Hillary. We've been seeing the same attacks on Trump, the same responses to Trump's attacks for upwards of 6 months. I just don't really think that her campaign added anything new to their narrative last night.
So moving on to the next part, what do you believe that each candidate would have to do in order to get their leg up on their opponent in the next debate?
Nick, we can start with you.
Well, there's a number of things I think Hillary did right this debate, and then other things I think that she can improve on. And the things that she can improve on are those things like those robotic responses and definitely getting more substance in. It's a little interesting because there's two opposing sides of the argument I've heard. I've heard some people say, oh, she didn't fight enough against Trump. She should have pushed back more. She should have had, she sort of, I don't know, to some extent, gone down to his level, because that is what his supporters want to, you know, would like to see. And then there are people on the other hand who said she should have engaged with him less. So I think either way, there's always going to be people who aren't appeased, who want something differently. But we're not trying to appeal to those people. What Hillary needs to try to appeal to is the American moderate. And the moderate person in America doesn't want to see some, you know, insult brawls on the stage. What they want to see is clear, substantive points about how someone or some candidate is going to make America better, is going to fix the problems we have. And I think if Hillary focuses on that, focuses on gaining the moderate support and gaining the support of undecided voters and even some Republicans who might have been upset with Trump's actions last night. These are the type of people Hillary should be going for. And I think that what she needs to do is actually stay the course to some extent, focus on just talking about her platform, talking about these issues. And also, I think she should be focusing on correcting Trump on these issues that she brought up. I don't think she needs to go as far as saying, check out my fact checker every time you screw something up, because no one's going to do that for the most part. But I think it's important for her to draw a line in the sand and when he's saying something wrong, and then, you know, reply with, you know, what actually she supports. And I think that's the way she gains the support of the American moderate and undecided voter.
And Andrew, what do you think that Mr. Trump needs to do to gain support of by undecided voters?
So I really think last night, if there was one way I could characterize it, it was the night of missed opportunities for Donald Trump. There was hardly any mention of Benghazi, no mention at all of the Clinton Foundation, and as we touched upon earlier, there was just a brief exchange regarding Hillary's email scandal. So Trump was really on the defensive for most of the night, and I think in the coming debates, he needs to work on turning the negative attention towards Hillary. He really needs to attack her about Benghazi, about the Clinton Foundation, and about her email scandal, because trustworthiness is really where people have an issue with Hillary Clinton. And I think it's important to expose her lies. She's big on her experience. In my personal opinion, her experience as Secretary of State does nothing but disqualify her from the White House. So I really think Trump needs to just focus on being more aggressive and more on the offensive in the next debate, rather than letting Hillary attack him and most of the night being focused on him defending himself.
All right, so we've talked about the moderator's role, specifically Lester Holt, throughout this whole show. So comparing to Lester Holt and looking towards the future, what do you believe that the moderator's role should be in debate in general, and what do you hope to see in the upcoming next two debates?
Yeah, so again, I'll just repeat it. I was less than thrilled with Lester Holt's performance. I think it's very interesting that in the Commander-in-Chief Forum a few weeks ago, Matt Lauer, who is also an NBC chief anchor, was harshly criticized for his what many consider subpar moderation as well. So Lester Holt, another key anchor for NBC, I think between him and Matt Lauer, NBC's ability to moderate a presidential debate is very much being scrutinized right now. So I think that's quite troubling for them. The next debate will be moderated by Anderson Cooper and Martha Raddatz. I think it's important for them to have more of a presence. If a candidate starts veering off course, I think they should speak up more, a bit more hands-on, pulling them back in, saying, excuse me, Secretary Clinton, excuse me, Mr. Trump, that's not what I asked you. You need to answer my question for the American people. You must answer this question. And just a quick note to add, I interned for Fox News Channel, specifically Fox News Sunday in D.C. this summer, and my boss was Chris Wallace, and he will be moderating the third debate. So I have every belief that he'll do a far better job than Lester Holt.
All right. As I said earlier, I didn't actually think Lester did a bad job. I think he allowed the candidates to be themselves and, you know, allowed people to get that view of what they do. And that being said, if we had a moderator like that in every debate, I don't think that would be good. And I think we do need to change up the role of the moderators for each debate so we can see different aspects of the candidate, so people can have the most knowledge possible when making their decision come the election. So to that extent, I think we need a candidate who's more involved, especially with making sure the candidates stay on focus, stopping them from getting in these sort of nitty-bitty fights and whatnot. And I think something like that will allow the candidates or force the candidates to focus on the issues and focus on answering these questions. Another thing I was actually thinking when I was watching this yesterday, I don't know why people don't do this. When you see a candidate up there, for example, with Trump saying, oh, you supported the war in Iraq, I think it'd be hilarious if these candidates or if the moderators were like, oh, you say you didn't. Well, let's look at this clip from 2001. And then, like, showing a clip of Trump saying, yeah, I support the war or something like that. And, hey, you could do this for Hillary, too. I just think if we're trying to hold our politicians accountable, I think the best possible way, aside from your word, because apparently we've reached the point in American politics where you deny facts just at face value. If we had, like, videos or sound bites or something that's irrefutable on stage, I think that would put the candidates in some really awkward positions and force themselves to be honest with the American people, and that's just what we need.
So any final thoughts on last night's debate or the election in general? Nick?
No, I think at this point the polls show that Hillary has a slight edge. I expect this edge to increase after this debate, although it's been said that not much has changed after this. None of the polls have actually been released. The most latest is from yesterday before the debate, I'm assuming. We'll see in the next coming days how that debate affected the polls, and I think the undecided voters will slowly but surely be convinced that Hillary is the better candidate, as is the case, and come this election, I hope to see blue in the swing states, and with that, the success of Hillary Clinton and her in the presidency.
Yeah, definitely excited as well for the upcoming debates. A week from today is the vice presidential debate between Governor Mike Pence and his Democratic counterpart, Senator Tim Kaine. I expect that debate to be far more substantive and much more focused on policy, as they're both career politicians with, I would consider, good records on both sides. And yeah, much the same. I and all my fellow young Republicans here on Lafayette College are excited for this very exciting time. We're excited to keep campaigning and doing everything we can to put Donald J. Trump in the White House come November 6th.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate having both of you with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. That was the end of the show. We've actually stopped recording now. So right now we're just going to finish.